9:13. This is John Williams, and a good morning to you. I'm here until noon and on social media, WGN King John. I'm just so happy to see that Ray Lopez, guys, has decided that enough is enough. If you are not shoveling the ice and snow in front of your building, you will be fined. I thought the number was in the 30s. Steve Grzanich is saying it's in the 60s, the numbers of businesses that are getting cited. Is that correct, Steve?
That's right. 60, I think the total was 60.
Wow.
In his ward.
And that's just the 35th.
Right,
I mean, we've got the 34th and the 30th. We got a lot of wards in this city.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, there on my street as an example, it's really hit or miss. There are a couple of buildings that haven't done anything to their sidewalks, and it is like an ice rink. It is worse than an ice rink. It's so treacherous.
Well, in part where I go, because it'll be choppy, right? So you got some snow, it melted. There's footprints, there's dogs that have walked through. So it's not cleared, and it's not even smooth. Every step is perilous. I was walking back from the L yesterday or the day before, and there had been some recent snow on the sidewalk, so it was just recently, and a guy was shoveling ever so carefully the building in front, the sidewalk in front of his building. He did not go one inch over on either side. And I know you can't do the whole thing, but I just love how people carve out their responsibility and won't assume any other responsibility or help. But it's not their job. It's the other guy's job.
And even with the 60 citations that have been issued in the 15th Ward, this story says 3,400 complaints have been made about this since October 1st.
Really?
Yeah, 3,400.
I should mention 3,300 of those have been by me. You may be listening to us outside of Chicago, but I'm sure your city or suburb or town has shoveling rules too, and people just don't do it. They don't do it. In Chicago, so here's just a couple of the rules about this. You know, a postal worker slipped on the ice yesterday, broke a kneecap. You may have done something like that too, but that's just one report. So Ray Lopez is out in his ward, but he's telling everybody in the city to start being more responsible. I don't know how many fines are actually being levied, but maybe that will get people's attention. You're supposed to shovel a space 5 feet wide. That's wide enough for a stroller, a couple of people to get through. And businesses, I think the number was, Steve, you were doing it, $250 to $500 a day if you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And $50 for homeowners.
For homeowners, right.
So if you're a condo association, and I'm the president of mine, I'm just thinking now, maybe I don't love this idea. If you're a condo building, then I guess whoever's in charge of that thing has to make sure. And that's what we have. We have a lot of in Chicago, these, residential 2, 3, 4 flats. And some of them are shoveled and some of them are not.
Yeah. And as a fellow condo board president, I have to tell you that this is one of the things that we do for our building just because we want to be good neighbors. There are three owners in our building that have pets and walk their dogs, and we know what it's like to have that. So we're out and we do that because we know. I mean, just walking through the neighborhood, you could fall and hurt yourself pretty badly on some of these sidewalks.
So do you do more than just your sidewalk? Is that what you're saying?
We do the sidewalks that go around the building and in front of the building, and then on the outside of our wrought iron fence, which is the city parkway, that sidewalk, we do the whole length front of our building.
And I don't know what you're paying for that, but I think that's a service to your residents, because you're right. If you are going to walk out the front of your building, you're going to turn right or left, and you're going to walk the 20 feet in front of your building, but then if the other people haven't done it, you're screwed.
Yeah.
So you might as well shovel some more. I mean, that's always been my attitude.
Yeah, and I think that encourages your neighbors to do it. When they see that you've done yours, they're probably more likely, at least I hope they are, to continue the trend down the block.
And a convenient thing when you're shoveling your neighbor's walk is you can take their newspapers. You can cancel your subscription to the Tribune or Sun-Times and just take their papers because they're right there. Just a thought. Bob wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Good morning, Bob. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello, John. That would be the Tribune newspaper, of course. I was going to say, all the property owners want the city to, get the streets cleaned that quick, And if you own property, you should shovel your walks and maybe your neighbor and elderly people, whoever you can help out. But, you can't let it go. It's dangerous for everybody,
Oh,
I'm in and out all the time and in a lot of different places, so I see a lot of people that don't think it concerns them, But, it's always good, and I'm glad you're out again in the morning. And rest of the city, the owners, the shovel those walks.
I'm with you completely, Bob. It's nice of you to say that. Have a good morning and be careful out there. Bobby just texted in and said, King John, I'm not king yet. The paperwork is tied up in Cook County. But boy, if it goes through, stuff's going to get done. Let me tell you. I'll put Dave Ennett in charge of snowing and sidewalks and shoveling and stuff.
Oh, no, you won't.
That'll be your area of responsibility.
No.
Kings tend to be good delegators, as it turns out. King John, shovel the damn bus stops, please. Signed, Bobby. Yeah, Bobby, I get you. John, in watching the impeachment managers talk yesterday, they brought up direct quotes from the founding fathers like Alexander Hamilton and leaned heavily on the Constitution. I'm curious what Thomas Jefferson might say about this. When will you be talking to him next? I'm actually going to be talking to Teddy Roosevelt this Saturday in Barrington. They do a kind of Chautauqua out there, a community forum. The winter or January warming, they call it, at their White House out there. And that thing sells out. Chris Christie is coming in to speak. They're flying Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for the Tribune, who now lives in the South. He's coming up. There's this whole group of people that will be giving presentations and talks all day long. And for the lunchtime entertainment, Teddy Roosevelt and I will be on the stage for exactly 1 hour, we were told. We tend to go long, and we'll entertain and talk a little bit about history and maybe some of this stuff, too. It really would be in Jefferson's wheelhouse, but Roosevelt's coming to town for that. And thanks to the folks in Barrington for letting us be take the stage. Who was it? One of the late-night comics last night said that they quoted Alexander Hamilton so much that the House managers are up for 5 Tonys. Line 2. Okay. Got time for that? Sandy, you're on WGN. How are you? Good morning.
Good morning, John. I am doing awesome. I get to talk to you on this lovely morning.
Yes.
But I was just telling your producer that I not only shovel mine, I shovel 3 other people on the same side of my block, and I do 3 on the opposite side of my street because they're all seniors, and in the last several years have had heart attacks, and I don't want them out there doing this snow, and I make them stay in the house.
Yeah, yeah. And it's good exercise. I mean, you know what? Don't join the health club. Just shovel the sidewalk, for crying out loud.
Exactly.
Well, you are a good citizen, and I'm going to knight you when I become king. Dave Ennett will be at the ceremony because he'll be in charge of sidewalk shoveling.
But there you go.
Sandy, thank you for that.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You might want to take a note. That was Sandy.
See you there, Sandy.
Try and say it. I'll point to you, Dave. I want you to say that more enthusiastically.
Well, I don't seem to have a choice in
3, 2, 1, go.
See you there, Sandy.
I don't really feel it coming from Dave Ennett this morning. By the way, speaking of the late night comics, LF, can you play the James Corden soundbite? So a lot is being made about Adam Schiff and how he's doing. Sean Hannity said on Fox News that Schiff looks like he lost his mind, babbling over and over and over again. David Axelrod and John Dean were on CNN, and they said it was a tour de force, one of the most remarkable performances they'd ever seen on the Senate floor. So I guess you would expect that from those players. Corden was pretty funny last night, though.
Things went so late because Republicans were busy blocking all 11 of the Democrats' attempts to subpoena witnesses and obtain new evidence during the trial. If you didn't watch last night, it basically went like this. What about no? How about no? What about absolutely not? Republicans started the trial by refusing to introduce evidence or hear from witnesses, which is like me throwing a Super Bowl party and then going, just a few quick rules, no food, no drinks, and no watching football.
My turn. Okay, it's 9:40 on WGN. This is John Williams. By the way, Dave Ennett, I was mentioning to you off the air and a little bit on the air that when I get to be king, you'll be in charge of sidewalk maintenance. And thank you for happily accepting that responsibility. John, what if my sidewalk is only 4 foot wide? You have to shovel it 5 feet wide, your sidewalk. If it's only 4 foot wide, this listener wants to know, what should they do? My suggestion would be you widen your sidewalk. You get some concrete and you widen that bad boy out. But I presume that 4 feet would be okay. 630 said, hey, John, I work for a uniform delivery company, and I constantly have to shovel and salt the entryways to many different kinds of businesses. Another listener said, John, people are having a difficult time paying parking tickets. Good luck on collecting $500 for no shoveling on the sidewalk. Maybe this week we write warning tickets. I don't even know that the people will see them. 630 said, I judge my neighbors by how long they leave their trash bins out and how long it takes them to shovel their driveway. Well, that would be just a little bit all of us, wouldn't it? Shovel the crosswalks! Exclamation point. It's worse than the ice in the streets. Who's responsible for the crosswalks? The city? The shop owners or tenants? I presume it's the city. And I get your point. I mean, I walked down the middle of the street to get to the L because the sidewalks were bad. But you're right. Some of the crosswalks aren't good either. Hey, King John, tell people push the snow. If you must lift it, lift with your knees. Thank you for the advice. 331. 312 said, hey, Starbucks at Lincoln, Palina and Roscoe have shoveled nothing, and it has become an ice hell nightmare, which I believe is a new drink they're going to roll out in the summer, the ice hell nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
630, when it's snowing all day, how often am I supposed to go out? You don't have to begin until it stops. And then if it stops after 4, you have until the next morning. If it stops before 4, you've got 3 hours. Just some notes you might want to make, Dave.
Thank you.
As the commissioner of shoveling. In fact, we'll give Dave's cell phone here in just a minute. And if you've got any questions, problems, or conundrums, just reach out to Dave Ennett, who will be in charge of sidewalk shoveling when I get to be king. Lots more texts about this, but that's the drill. And the only reason I'm kind of harping on it today is because, A, it's what I do, but also because Alderman Ray Lopez said, okay, enough is enough. I don't know what finally got him off the dime, but he is patrolling literally his ward. 60 citations have been written. I don't know if that means 60 fines are going to be paid, Steve Grzanich, but at least he's alerting people. And it'd be nice to see the other aldermen throughout the city kind of use this opportunity, this little 3-day snow we're having, to tell businesses to get the job done.
Yeah, and I don't know, is the sweet spot calling the alderman directly, just calling that office directly instead of 311?
That's what they say. Yeah. You're supposed to call 311, but yeah, maybe just call your alderman, because he should or she should take a little more personal responsibility for that, right?
Yeah, it would seem like it, yep.
Our news click yesterday at WGNradio.com, the daily web poll question. We put it on my Facebook page, too. I'm WGN King John there. Ask this. A group in Chicago wants peddler's licenses for people to sell pot at markets and out of trucks on the South Side. You had three options. Let's see how it went. Good idea, 10%. I'm going to have to think about this, 14%. And, oh, I've thought about this. No, not a good idea, 77%. We'll have to tell that to our guest. We're going to do the All-Star Game on WGN Radio. Is that right?
Yes, we are.
Featuring one Patrick Kane.
Patrick Kane, his 9th All-Star appearance, Saturday.
Will John Whiteman have the call?
It will not be John Whiteman.
It could be. They should rotate it through all of the various team announcers.
I'm sure John appreciates that, but I also think he wouldn't mind just having the night off.
Hey, John, what a thrill. You get to pack your bags, fly across the country.
To St. Louis.
And do a game that really it doesn't matter instead of spending time. Kevin, you're on WGN. What can we do for you? You're on the air.
I called in because, was it Steve was telling you about a Derek Jeter commercial a couple minutes ago?
Yeah, the little girl in the beads. I haven't seen it.
I just felt like I had to call in because he left out the most precious part of the commercial.
What was that?
She set up like a little Kool-Aid stand on the sidewalk, and he walks up to help her.
Wow. This looks amazing. Can I help you make a few?
Sure.
You sure?
Uh-huh.
Hi, I'm Derek. Nice to meet you.
Uh-huh.
What's the ultimate dream for your business?
We have this hunger project, okay. And I give back to the kids that don't have enough money to buy food.
How long have you had this dream?
10 years.
So you're 6 years old and you had the dream for 10 years. That's pretty good. That's someone that knows what they want to do in life.
You know, that's quite a dream for a six-year-old to have a dream for 10 years.
Pretty good?
Yep.
Okay.
Thanks for that phone call yesterday. I had never seen that commercial before. I guess I'm the only person.
I think you are.
Somebody sent a text in yesterday, and they said, how have you not seen that? It's on every 35 seconds.
It is. That and J.J. Watt for the same advertiser.
What is it?
American cleaning out the river. American Family Insurance.
Oh, that's the one where they're cleaning out the river.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
You swing a mean net, J.J.
I've seen that one. I had not seen the Derek Jeter one where the little, by the way, the updated version of that commercial, Derek Jeter comes up and the little girl has her lemonade stand and he says, "Hey, honey, what are you selling?" She goes, "I'm selling weed here in Chicago. I've got a pot license and I'm pushing some smokes."
And I'm the only one who didn't vote for you for the Hall of Fame.
By the way, I don't think you should be in the hall. I'm just kidding, because T.O. Hardiman was on our show yesterday, Mr. Ceasefire, and he's the guy who said that we ought to have street vendors at, you know, food markets, craft fairs, food trucks. You know, we ought to have the same sort of delivery of pot on the South and West Side as we have of other things, particularly since it just seems like there's a select community, and there are no African Americans in there, who do have the medicinal licenses and have the pot shops up. And I think a lot of people are watching all the money being made, and they're standing there going, "Wait a minute, why aren't we included in this?" Tio's back on the phone this morning. Tio, it's John. Welcome back. How are you today?
I'm doing good, John. I appreciate you having me back on your show here.
Tio, I don't think it's a good idea for that little girl to be selling pot on the South Side.
Well, I don't think a little girl should be selling pot anyway. You know, when I ran for governor, I wasn't really totally in favor of legalizing recreational marijuana, but at the same time, I knew that they were going to pass it, you know, eventually, but not for little girls and kids, without a doubt. I don't agree with that either.
There you go. There you go. So how'd your press conference go? You were on with us yesterday in advance of it. Did you have a thing yesterday?
Yes, the press conference was very, very good. We got a chance to get our message out. And the main thing is this here, like you said before I came on, here it is. One of the reporters from WBBM News Radio asked me a question, saying, she didn't ask me a question. She said that African-American people will be considered in the second round. So that's a red flag right there. What do you mean a second round? Why is it that African-American vendors or, investors are going to be considered later on in the process? It makes no sense. But we are pushing peddler's license all the way to the top. We have to get some legs under the movement with the legislators and get them to draft some legislation. The Chicago Sun-Times gave us a good, write-up, a good story on the press conference yesterday. And a lot of people agree that we need peddler's license for these young people to help reduce unemployment in the African-American community.
But you couldn't do that for alcohol. And you don't sell cigarettes out of trucks or at, fairs and craft shows and stuff like that. I mean, if booze is the equivalent, and I think for a lot of people it is, you got to go into a store to buy it, right?
Yeah, well, let me say this to you, out of all due respect. You know, remember back in Prohibition, I did my research on Prohibition, the bootleg days with the Italian gangsters and stuff. So once they legalized alcohol, they open up stores, liquor stores. You can buy alcohol in the lounges and all that kind of stuff. What I'm saying, we have over 1,000 abandoned storefronts in the African-American community on the South and West Side. Let the people set up the shops in there then, because a lot of people in the neighborhood do not have $250,000 and all those thousands to open up the way these dispensaries are opening up. So if you talk about equity, equality, just be totally inclusive with it and allow African-American people to benefit, become a part of this big money wagon that's about to take place. I thought it's a $1 billion industry.
Those shops weren't open in the city a week. One of them got ripped off. And I'll tell you what, my text line at first said, "Hey, this guy's thinking out of the box, creative idea." And then people just lined up with all of the problems with this. And one of them is you'll have a bunch of, amateur operators with a lot of cash. It's just going to be a problem. This is a bad idea.
No, I would have to battle back, John, I must admit. Now, the thing about it, the illegal drug trade has been going on for a long time now. So what I'm saying, let's bring it into the black market, bring everything above board, and let's go to work. What makes it a bad idea? Is it a bad idea because of the people that own the marijuana dispensaries? Is that a bad idea? Just because they had the money to buy, the higher security, they had money to open up these facilities? What about that being a bad idea? So why is it when it comes to the brothers in the neighborhood, it's a bad idea? The thing about it is that everybody needs to benefit. This is a $1 billion industry. If we're talking about healing Chicago, restorative justice, people of color have been locked up, with this prison industrial complex because of the failed war on drugs. So how is it a bad idea just because we're speaking up for the underdog? Somebody needs to answer that question, John.
You're supposed to pay taxes on that stuff, Tio. So how does that happen? It's a pretty high tax rate. How would these street vendors or guys at the farmers markets collect the taxes and turn them in?
Well, first and foremost, the street vendors would purchase the marijuana, recreational use marijuana, from the dispensaries, okay? Or they can go direct to the source, and that therefore that would be a paper trail right there. And then the young guys would have an app where, you know, you can use your cash or whatever to pay for it, and there needs to be a receipt recorded every time you make a sale. So, you know, we have to tweak the peddler's license policy a little bit, but, you know, we put it out there, and it's a work in progress, but there's ways to make sure that taxes are being paid and everybody's above board. So that's what I'm trying to push, so people can see the vision here, because for one, there's a 45% unemployment rate amongst African-American young men in Chicago right now, and gun violence is still a big issue. It's an epidemic, and we can help ease some of the tensions around the illegal drug market once we, you know, allow these young men to have peddler's license, and next you know, we can improve the quality of life, you know, to a degree. I don't want to just depend on marijuana, but I think it's one avenue that we can go down right now that's right out there in our face right now.
Teo Hardeman's on a phone line. He goes by Mr. Ceasefire sometimes. He's the director of something called Violence Interrupters. You've heard his name around Chicago for years. Do you have to get the city to approve this idea, Teo, or is it the state that has to approve this idea?
Well, we're looking to reach out to state representatives and state senators. It should come from the state first, and then we can hopefully talk to Mayor Lori Lightfoot, because she was talking about set-asides for different groups in the city. Set aside some peddler's license for these young men in Chicago. That's what I'm saying. And young women. I do not want to leave the women out, okay? But the thing is this here. You're talking about set aside. Let's make this happen. Let's make it, equal. You know, let's spread the wealth for everybody in Chicago. That's what I'm talking about right now.
Yeah. You know, the one thing that I don't like, I was an advocate for this for all the reasons I think you would be, right? Why are we locking up all of these people, and why don't we tax it, and why don't we bring it above board, legitimize it, control the quality, stuff like that. So I kind of get that. And then as we got closer and closer to it, I started to feel a little uneasy about it. And there's something that I don't like, just kind of bugs me, T.O., about the city pushing drugs on people to make money for the city. That's what it feels like to me now. It's like, hey, let's hurry up and find as many ways as we can to get marijuana in the hands of people in the city of Chicago so then we can tax it. If you said, is it a great idea that everybody smokes dope? I think a lot of us would still say no. But by God, the city is in now. They want this to happen. And it's no different than the city being the drug pusher in the past, except now it's legal and the city is diving in.
Well, I totally agree with you and understand that I'm not interested in investing in no peddler's license myself or opening up a dispensary. But the thing is, you're right. You know, right now the casinos are on the table, gambling and marijuana. And it's crazy. It's like the city is pushing the marijuana now to bring in money. And that's a poor example of leadership, not just for the city overall, because why can't we think about other means and ways to raise revenue that can take care of the good people here in Illinois outside of marijuana, drugs, or, you know, or gambling places. So you made a valid point, in my opinion, there.
Yeah. Well, listen, Teo, good luck to you on this. I'm not a gambler, speaking of gambling, but it's a long shot what you're up to here, my friend.
Well, I've been up against long shots all my life. I was born and raised in the heart of the ghetto, John. So and we'll be okay, trust me. We have to become very resilient and push. I think we have to speak truth to power. This is a valid, situation when we talk about peddler's license. I think it's valid. The people in the underdog, the young brothers and sisters in the neighborhoods do not have the money to allow them to purchase this peddler's license. And I believe we're going to pick up some traction very soon. We have a few more demonstrations that we're organizing, one next week. And as we keep moving, I'll let you guys know in advance once we organize another major demonstration about this topic.
Nice to talk to you today. Stay in touch, okay?
Appreciate you.
That's T.O. Hardeman. I don't know how you would set the odds on that happening, but I wouldn't bet the House on that, or the Senate for that matter. It's 10:08. This is WGN Radio. Lots of text as always. You can call too. That's 312-981-7200 about that marijuana sales on the streets of Chicago. That's a long shot, right? 630 said the first weed peddler would be robbed within 5 minutes of pushing that cart outdoors. I'm telling you, it wasn't a week that one of the shops got robbed. The existing brick and mortar stores in Chicago. And as I recall, it was believed to be an inside job. I don't remember what the outcome of that was. John, but says 847, this is a good idea. At least it's worth a try. I hope those people get a chance. And 847 texted in this morning and said, hey, I'm in Biloxi, and it's really gosh darn cloudy. I'm going to let you enjoy that, Biloxi. It's actually not that bad in Chicago. This is not super cold. It's not super snowy.
I think this is the snow we were talking about yesterday. It's right at, you know, freezing point, kind of comfortable.
Yeah, I don't terribly mind it, although I completely understand the concern about the shoveling of the walks. Although 630 said, hey, how long are you going to talk about snow shoveling? Which is interesting because as you write that in, I then talk about it some more. John, is the law for Cook County or just Chicago? I live in Des Plaines, and people do not shovel. Well, everybody has their own. The one we were talking about was a city of Chicago rule. And John, maybe the city should hire the unemployed to shovel the sidewalks. You know what? I don't think there's enough of them to do that. 773 said the city should offer licenses to bars to allow cigarette or cigar smoking. I think enough bars would stay smoke-free. But if you want to have a smoking bar or restaurant, let them do that and then charge them a little more for that license.
You know, that's interesting because I think one of the arguments at the time against that was the secondhand smoke for the bartenders.
Right.
So wouldn't you make the same argument for the marijuana lounges?
I think in both cases, you can make the argument, then don't work there. Like if this is right. A new business coming up, and by the way, maybe the bartender smokes anyway. If you are a firsthand smoker, maybe you don't object necessarily to the secondhand smoke. Maybe you do, but then don't take the job. And maybe they'll have special vacuums to shoo the smoke away from the bar. I mean, that to me is a responsibility that the business owner should be able to take and a choice the customers should be able to have. And if you don't want to go to those places, don't go to those places. I would never go to a smoking bar or restaurant now, but I completely support your right to do so. In Springfield, am I right about this, Steve? They are opening up marijuana smoking lounges.
I'm going to do a story on it next hour that, well, they've approved the first one in the state. The Springfield City Council has. And it's adjacent to a dispensary, so they're working on the plan to figure out what they want it to look like. They said it's not going to be just a big square room with people smoking in it. You know, they're going to make it look like some sort of a lounge or club or things like that.
Will they serve alcohol or snacks?
I would say, well, I don't know.
Why not treat it like a bar? If you can drink alcohol legally and you can smoke pot legally, you can get snacks at a bar.
Maybe that's one of the things they're talking about. I would imagine it might be snacks might be more likely than alcohol.
Yeah.
We'll see. But, you know, Mayor Lightfoot had moved at first to say you could smoke in a cigar shop. And then she put a hold on that while they go to Springfield for help. But there are a lot of people in Illinois who don't have a legal place to smoke legal marijuana. I mean, it's true.
Right. If you're in a condo, the apartment would the association would keep you from doing it.
You can't smoke it outside.
You can't smoke it outside. You're not supposed to have it in your car. I mean, it's supposed to be sealed in your automobile, truck, or van. You're not supposed to smoke it in there. So that's a good point. I know one place they'll smoke it, and that is every place they're already smoking it, because you walk around the city, you smell it everywhere you go.
Yeah.
They'll smoke it on the sidewalk. They'll smoke it by the L. They'll smoke it up and down the street. They'll smoke it in the cars. They'll smoke it in their homes. It sounds like a Dr. Seuss thing.
It does.
JT, you're on WGN Radio. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. How you doing, John? You know, I'm thinking, I grew up in the New York City and northern New Jersey area, and I remember I was a disco kid. And when I heard the word hip-hop, there was a lot of negative connotations to it. But look at hip-hop today. Hip-hop is one of the most lucrative businesses. Everyone had disagreements with hip-hop. But look at all the billionaires that's been created by the musicians and the artists who were a part of that. And at one point, they had to go independent because the big record labels would not let them come inside.
JT, why are you telling me about music? What are you talking about?
Well, I'm telling you about music because just like you see how hip-hop has been legitimized, I see the same thing with marijuana. I never thought I would agree with marijuana because I've seen a lot of deaths associated with it because I grew up in places like Harlem and Newark, New Jersey, and a lot of young African-Americans lost their lives on the street peddling this dope. And most of the people that were coming into these areas were mostly white suburban kids buying this stuff. So now that we legitimize marijuana, it makes sense that these young African-American, Hispanic youth, young people being out on the street selling this stuff be able to do it legally. Because when you look at prohibition and alcohol and look at all the drugs going back over the years, all those mobsters, they became some legitimate families over the decades, right? We respect some of those people today. They even tied the Kennedys back to alcohol.
Every time this comes up, I think of the Kennedys. The word that I use to describe what you're asking us to embrace or even think about, JT, is whiplash. Remember, December 31st, marijuana was illegal. January 1st, it was legal. And we're kind of getting our heads around that, and we're slowly wading into that pool. And it's just like diving into the deep end to say, I know, let's tell kids out of the back of their car they can sell pot like they used to, and don't worry, they'll collect the taxes and they'll make money. Hooray. That may make sense, but it's just so much so fast for people to believe.
Hip-hop, John, come on. Everybody had a lot to say about hip-hop. It's not real music, right? But look at all the billions of dollars that's been created by it, and look at all the black billionaires that's been created by it, at least two of them.
Yep.
And let me say this.
Okay.
When you have black people make money, what do? They get better education for their kids. They find better neighborhoods for their family. They get good health care. Guess what? All these people crying about all these urban kids,
yep,
who don't make any money running the street, when they can afford to do better, like Oprah Winfrey say, they do better. So I think it's time to allow anybody who can sell this stuff legitimately with a license in their community, let them do it. And let them improve.
I got
the
you. I really appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling in, JT.
Take care, and have a good day.
You have a good day. John, I live in Des Plaines, and I shovel because that's how I roll. Whenever we talk about something like this, the people who are happy to brag about their good citizenship always call and text in. Some of them host this show. But then, 708, what is this person talking about? If ducks flew upside down, they would quack up. I guess that's just a little joke. Maybe I should get my rim shot out, and I'll read that again later, and then it will be really funny. John, chips, brownies, and chip dip, that's what they should be selling at that Springfield shop. I guess so. I don't know that much about that. You know, sometimes I go down a rabbit hole. I talked about this the other day. You hear one thing or think about one thing, and it makes you think about another thing, and it makes you think about another thing, and the next thing you know, you're in a place, you don't know how you got there, and it's 4:30. And the internet and personal computers allow us to do that these days. So last night I got home from the DePaul basketball game, and I was sad because DePaul played badly. And I needed an upper, and I thought, I'll just pop on a movie. I put on the Mark Ruffalo, Keira Knightley movie, which I really like. And I had seen it before, but I hadn't watched it in a really long time. And as I was clicking through, I thought, oh, I'll go ahead and watch this movie. It's Begin Again is what the movie's called. Have you guys seen Begin Again?
No. Is she she's a musician?
Right.
Yeah,
Mark Ruffalo is a down-and-out record producer, and she's a musician-singer.
I have not, but my family liked it.
It's a terrific movie. Now, sometimes I recommend movies, and you don't like them. But if you don't like this one, that's on you. Because Keira Knightley's lovely. Mark Ruffalo is such a good rascal. He always plays a guy who's got troubles and he's just a mess, but you're kind of rooting for him. James Corden is in this movie. He's a good actor and obviously a good musician and singer too. And the movie's about Ruffalo trying to get his life together. He's lost his career. He's lost his business. He had an independent record label. He's lost his home. His wife is estranged. He sees his daughter once a month. He's drinking. He's in a bar, and that's when Keira Knightley first sings, and he realizes that he's got something here. Here's a talent that he could develop. And the movie's about the record that they make together. And it's just a real fun, sweet, sometimes funny, sometimes sad story. But you really are cheering them on as they go to make this record.
Sounds like A Star Is Born almost.
Well, it sounds like a lot of
the
these
premise,
movies. And
yeah.
One of the things, Mary, that kind of jumped out at me was, for this movie to work, Keira Knightley has to be able to sing. Here's Keira Knightley singing.
Take my hand, let's see where we wake up tomorrow. Best laid plans sometimes are just a one-night stand. I'll be damn, Cupid's demanding back his arrow. So let's get drunk. Youth is wasted on the young. It's hunting season, and this lamb is on the run.
I think it works. You know, if you would listen to that and say, oh, that's not a great singer, it's good enough. And coming out of her, it's quite fun to watch. So, like, I like that. I'm not a big Keira Knightley fan, but I think she's a credible singer, and she's a good singer in this movie. Who knew?
Never knew she could sing.
Me neither.
Ever.
I had no idea.
She should have sang in Love Actually.
Good.
Why not?
Well, so then what about Emma Stone? This is the rabbit hole I go down then. So then that made me think of Emma Stone in La La Land.
Here's to the ones who dream, foolish as they may seem. Here's to the hearts that ache. Here's to the mess we make. She told me a bit of madness.
And Emma Stone in the movie is not going to be a great singer. She's going to be an actress, and her husband, boyfriend, or whatever is the, you know, jazz musician. But I'm like, I liked her singing in that too. And again, it wasn't great singing, maybe by somebody's standards, but it worked for me. And here again, I didn't know Emma Stone could pull that off, but I think she did.
I think her voice is really cool. I mean, it's
she
not
has
like,
a good voice. Period. Yeah, a cool voice.
It's not great, but it's good. It's fun.
You know, I didn't go to Mamma Mia because then you just got everybody. You've got this whole bevy of actors and actresses in Mamma Mia, but I guess I could sample some of that. But from Emma Stone in La La Land, my brain went to Bradley Cooper singing Shallows with Lady Gaga in A Star Is Born.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in all the good times I find.
And when I was listening to him, I thought, oh, but he's not my favorite male movie star singer. And then I knew where I was going. Then I knew where this rabbit hole was taking me, because my favorite male movie star singer, I'll get to in just a second. You know what? Justin Kaufman at night does brackets. Best movies with a Chicago theme. Best this, best that. He should do a bracket of movie stars singing songs in movies. They're not famous singers. They're movie stars. They're singing. And then do it performance by performance. So you could put Keira Knightley up against Emma Stone. Who wins?
Well, are there enough of those, though?
I think there are. I mean, if you Google around, Elif, I think you'd be surprised how many you'd find.
I have a millennial question.
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe was originally an actress, and then she started singing, right?
Always an actress, but she did a little singing.
But, okay, so that's kind of like along these lines.
Right, right, right. So,
she didn't really sing. She just breathed, you know, her breathy.
Happy birthday.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
But
she talked. She was a talk singer.
And she was, she did more than just sing to John Kennedy, but I mean, yeah, I would exactly put her in this camp, and then maybe okay. She would lose to somebody else if you go back that far. I guess you almost could, right? I'm thinking more modern. I'm thinking Anne Hathaway.
Yeah, that's who I was going to say in Les Mis. Yeah.
I Dreamed a Dream in Les Mis.
I wasn't ready. Sorry.
Here we go.
Here we go.
I dreamed that love would never die. I dreamed that God would be forgiving. Then I was young and unafraid. The dreams were made used.
I know she's really good. It's just, that's not my cup of tea. But I mean, yeah, okay. Maybe Anne Hathaway wins the tournament, right? But I'd like to play it out. But the singer that I will watch the movie for, the movie star that I will watch the movie for to hear him sing, let's go ahead and play that, Elif. That's Johnny Depp in Sweeney Todd.
I know you've been locked out of sight all these years. Like me, my friend. Well, I've come home to find you waiting. To
Sings with Helena Bonham Carter in that movie too, and it's just terrific.
So that's a new category then. That would be singing in an accent not native to you, right? Keira Knightley would be in that one too.
Evidently, Johnny Depp would be a category unto himself. He's just so out there.
He's an international. He's created his own accent, right?
I'm not even sure he's one of us, so I almost don't even care.
I just watched Gilbert Grape the other day.
It's great.
Oh, what a great movie. Amazing in that movie. And Leo DiCaprio. Oh my, all the people that are in that movie is fantastic.
You know, and he's a personal wreck. You know, he's just not a good... being a human being isn't easy for him. Maybe a little bit like...
No, I don't care. I'd marry him.
Joaquin Phoenix and some of these guys who you go, I don't know what's going on in there, but on the screen, it works for me, so thank you for doing that. That's how I feel about Johnny Depp. But that movie is good, and he is really good in it. Lisa wanted to say something. Lisa, you're on WGN Radio. Good morning. Hey, Lisa, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Hey, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah, I told your screener there that I'm a music teacher and 35 years in the trenches, and so I'm always really impressed by actors or actresses who take the time to really hone in on their vocal skills. And one recently that I was really impressed with was Renee Zellweger. She did a lot of her own singing in Judy. And also Adam Driver did an amazing song at the end of Marriage Story.
Oh my gosh, that's right. I didn't pull that. Adam Driver's good at everything Adam Driver does. Walking into a room, he's good at it. And he's just multi-talented. Somebody just texted to us, Lisa, and they said Renee Zellweger in Judy and in Chicago, for that matter. I didn't even think of her. I haven't seen Judy yet.
Lisa, could you make anyone a singer?
Could I make anyone a singer? You know, I have the theory, and I always tell my students, everyone can sing unless you've had your vocal cords removed. But it's kind of a degree of how well can you match pitch and all that kind of stuff. So is that a yes or a no?
Well, does it help if, because I know some people who have a good voice and they can't sing. I know some people who don't have extraordinary voices talking, but dang, they're good singers. You know, it's kind of funny that way, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, karaoke is a real fun thing to go and experience when you're a trained singer. And you watch maybe five or six kind of inebriated people who think they can sing pretty well. And then you get someone who can really kind of get up there and you're like, oh, there's your ringer.
Yeah, that's fun. Although karaoke just makes me uncomfortable. I've never done it. I don't even like watching people do it. But that's more about me. I guess the planet loves that. Lisa, you'll have to come by and give us lessons sometime.
Okay, thanks.
Hi, Steve Dale. How are you?
I am great. I would have liked to have been the first guest. I mean, I pay for top billing here, you know.
You are the recipient of the first ever Excellence in Media Award from the National...
American Veterinary Medical Association.
National American...
Veterinary Medical Association.
You were at their convention or something?
Well, I'm going to be. Their convention is in the summer, but they made the announcement at a large veterinary convention called VMX in Orlando, Florida. And I said, what? Me? You know, it's so nice.
Congratulations.
I mean, really.
If you are without equal in the business.
Well,
you're a great advocate. You're a great communicator.
Well,
you know the material. You're not a veterinarian.
Not yet, no.
Have you ever thought about that? That would cost a fortune. You'd have to go back to school.
Yeah.
It's like going to med school.
Oh, it's worse. It's harder.
Being a veterinarian, I've heard that. It's hard to believe that, but I suppose.
Well, it's harder to get in. There aren't as many vet schools.
And I guess maybe it's complicated, too, because if you're a human doctor, you work on human beings. If you're a veterinarian, you work on all kinds of animals.
That's absolutely
correct. So maybe there's complications there that you don't otherwise have to deal with. And back in the day, a veterinarian would just take care of the most rudimentary things. But now, veterinary medicine has all of the branches, it seems, that human medicine
absolutely
has.
True. And the same equipment at emergency clinics, for example, not only x-ray machines, but also ultrasounds and all of that. You go to a cardiologist, you get the same exact treatment, same equipment as a veterinary cardiologist.
Which means we need to find a way to help people pay for that, because some of us will sometimes pay more for pet care than we do human care.
Well, no. That's not true. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So,
think
about
bills?
It. No. Think about it. You've known someone, unfortunately, in your family, a friend, a neighbor who's had cancer. We all do, right? So, if you go in for cancer surgery of some kind, then need chemotherapy and radiation after, and other medication to counteract that, perhaps. That can cost, it will cost, maybe $1 million. I mean, literally $1 million, right? In veterinary medicine, the same kind of cancer can happen to a dog, the same kind of surgery, the same radiation, the same chemotherapy, but not as much of it.
Sure.
And we're talking a lot of money. $5,000, $7,000, $8,000.
Oh, that's interesting.
But
so,
there's no comparison.
Well, there is in that my out-of-pocket is what I feel.
Right.
I don't even think about the millions of dollars that the insurance company paid or that the hospital discounted because of our provider or whatever. So that's a fair point. That's a fair
point. And I'll be talking about, I mean, there's pet insurance. There are ways.
Do you recommend that?
Yes.
Because I called somebody one time, and they made it sound like, sure, this is good insurance unless your dog gets sick. And then if there's any pre-existing condition or anything that we could ever say, well, maybe he already had that, then we won't pay. And I backed off.
Well, it depends on the pet insurance company. It's like anything else. And the pet insurance world, unfortunately, is very complicated. There are two basic kind of divisions. One pays for about 30%, give or take, of wellness care and anything else you might need. You know, sadly, your dog gets hit by a car. I mean, something very traumatic.
Or they swallow something and they need to have stomach surgery
and they
to
pay,
get it out.
Right, and they pay about 30% of that, give or take. The other model is they pay zero for wellness care, but 80% or more
That's
for that
I want.
Big emergency.
That's the one I want.
Yeah, and it's available.
And does an emergency include cancer or
depending
diabetes
on,
or
sometimes
whatever?
Sometimes it depends on the company. Sometimes you need an extra rider to pay to protect for that.
What was your reaction to the story this week? It was at, or was it in the Tribune last week? But we had one of the ladies that was on this Earth Board, an association that's an animal rescue. It's really an animal sanctuary. I know you know all about this.
So they say.
If you didn't hear the story, there was this animal sanctuary in Thawville, Illinois, in the Kankakee area. And hundreds of animals have been brought there over years. And it sounds like they were starved or malnourished, not taken care of. The animals were dying there. They weren't living out their natural lives. We've rescued pets, and I think a lot of people that give up their pets to be rescued, maybe grandma can't take care of it anymore, hope that the industry has safeguards to keep something like that from happening.
Well, there is no industry as such for that. You know, so this is an individual operator who has a sanctuary, who really didn't do very well and fulfill her promises. I don't know the specifics of this case or this individual, but here's what I'm getting at. Sometimes people mean well, and they get in way over their head and have no idea what to do. That happens actually somewhat frequently, and some people just don't mean well and want to take the money from people and don't much care about the animals and put the money in their pocket.
So Brenda and I've had dogs and we've got them from pet rescues. Seems like most people do that. I guess there's a few ways to acquire a pet. One is from a rescue organization, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think we should all patronize that service. Or are we just aiding and abetting people that are irresponsible breeders, and then the rescues take them, and then we take them, but really what we're doing is just keeping those other people in business. And then the other one is pet stores, right? What's your take on pet stores?
Okay, so there are several ways to purchase or adopt an animal, and one is a legitimate freestanding animal shelter. Great, that's a wonderful thing to do, period. There are rescues, and these days, unfortunately, as the example you gave, you have to do some homework to make sure this rescue is really legitimate and also not a puppy mill, incidentally. I mean, anyone can put up a website, right? Anyone can go to GoDaddy and these sorts of places, and you get nice-looking websites, or hire people for even nicer-looking websites. Does that really mean they're a legitimate breeder? You really need to see the operation. One more thing, and that is, and those are legitimate breeders. That person that's doing a great job, a superb job, and I have no issue with purebred dogs or cats, who's breeding a Maine Coon cat or an Irish setter and doing a very good job at it. And because people can, and I hope they do, go to animal shelters or rescues to adopt that mixed breed dog. Is a little bit of everything. That's what we have right now. But I have no issue whatsoever. It's America. We're supposed to have free choices. I just don't want them to come from puppy mills. So if you go to a pet store, no responsible breeder. I'll say it again. No responsible breeder ever sells to a pet store.
So does that mean all of the pets in pet stores are irresponsibly put there, that we should not patronize them?
Correct. And that's what Naperville is pursuing right now.
I just saw that story. So Naperville is what, going to ban the sale of dogs and cats at stores?
I hope. Chicago has.
And, but they're national chains that do this, right?
That's their problem. They're not doing, they're doing bad things. And, you know, there are individual pet stores that have said, you know what, we've been doing the wrong thing all these years, including one in Naperville that said a couple of years ago, we're just not going to follow that model anymore. We're just not going to sell dogs and cats. And they are still in business. My point is not to put pet stores out of business. It is to put puppy mills out of business.
Okay, but then you want them to source those pets then from someplace else. Pet stores can sell pet supplies and pet food.
Sure.
But if they want to sell pets, where are they supposed to get them?
Then they can adopt out animals.
Right.
And that model's been followed. That's what Petco and PetSmart do all the time.
Or they could be the wholesaler for breeders, right? Legitimate breeders. They could actually be the retailers.
I love you! Nobody does that! So it's about time. I want an Irish setter breeder, or whatever breed it is, a responsible breeder, to have a day at a pet store to explain what their breeds are all about. Probably not adopt them there because a responsible breeder is going to be more careful than that.
Daisy, our Dizzy Dappled Dachshund,
yes,
is a rescue from a puppy mill that we got from the Midwest Dachshund Rescue.
Mm-hmm.
So did you see the conundrum I think we're part of then? Whoever had Daisy originally and was just using her for breeding purposes and mistreating her.
Yes.
I've not only rescued Daisy, I've rescued them.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do, right? I mean, what are we going to do with the daisies of the world?
Well, the problem isn't only the pet stores. It's what I alluded to earlier. It's not only the pet stores that are selling these puppy mill dogs and sometimes cats. It is the online. And I don't know what to do about that. The federal government's going to have to step in at some point. But meanwhile, we can do what we can do, and that is prevent pet stores everywhere from selling dogs and cats, selling them, adopting them, or informing people about purebred dogs. I have no problem with
it. Well, maybe pet stores are less expensive than when you buy it from a breeder, because the amount of money some people spend on their dogs, they travel cross-country, and they give somebody $7,000 or $2,200, and it's like insane.
Well, that's not true. So there's a pet store.
I just said it on the radio.
But
it must
not
be true.
Because there's a pet store I'm thinking of right now in Chicago that is illegally, really, still selling dogs. And look them up.
Is it
this
expensive
place,
there?
Yes.
Okay.
And what's more, a lot of people can't afford it. So they take out loans, and the percent on the loans is like 40% or 60% or some crazy
really?
Thing
this
on
is
top
the racket
of everything
these guys
else.
Are in? Okay, hold on. So I want to also talk to you a little bit about support pets on planes.
This legislation about, that's a news story now, right?
Hold on a second. Steve Dale's in our studio. Can you tell?
I want to talk about this.
And if you've got a question or comment, 312-981-7200. At 10:47, I'm John Williams. Our Steve Dale, the pet expert, is the first recipient of the Excellence in Media Award from the National Veterinary Association.
Something. AVMA, American Veterinary Medical Association. And it's like, it really is the honor of my life. I mean, you know,
well, it
it's
should
crazy.
Be. I'm so happy for you. I saw that online this week, and I thought, this is the mother of veterinary organizations, and they have... This is the first time they've even given this award.
Yeah.
I think that's such a recognition of what you've been for the industry. It's really what you are for WGN Radio listeners, Steve. You're a font
Thank you.
Of information. Even if
or what you say to me off the air, that I'm full of it. Yeah. Either way.
I do not say that.
No, I know.
Joe wanted to say something. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hi, John. I just wanted to say a reference. I worked for the airlines for a lot of years as a supervisor, and I was extensively trained in trying to determine either support animals or service animals, and it's gotten so crazy now, and I'm glad the Department of Aviation is starting to do something. It's gotten so crazy, people trying to pass off their pets, Fifi, as service or trained service animals just so they can fly in the cabin of the airplane. And it's really gotten crazy because of these passengers know how things are, and they go nuts, and they create a big stir. And a lot of airlines will say, okay, well, let's put him on board. But it really inconveniences the other passengers, number one. And number two, you know what a service animal is. That dog doesn't move. It doesn't bark. It doesn't. You can tell the difference. And I really hope the Department of Aviation, FAA, cracks down on it just for the, number one, the employees at the airlines, but number two, for all the passengers.
Yeah, and maybe for some of the pets, too, for that matter. Well, what a good call, Joe. Thanks. Steve,
well,
what do you say about that?
Some of the pets, for that matter, too, is actually a really good point, because pets that are anxious are the ones barking, you know. So I'm responsible for this in a very crazy sort of way. Years ago, right after 9/11, all of these people that meant well didn't know what to do. So they greeted the family members that went from Pier, whatever the number was in New York City.
Yeah.
If you remember the story, they would go see the site and then go back to that pier. And, of course, they were distraught. So people brought animals. And in a story, I called them. I didn't know what to call them. So I called them comfort dogs. I thought, that's a nice name. Well, people picked up on that idea. And the idea is that, and it's true, that these dogs, any dog, does provide comfort to us. But there is a legal distinction, as well as a real distinction in training, as the listener just alluded to, between those dogs and a service dog.
Do you think people are abusing the opportunity?
Yes. That's the airline's fault, too, because the airlines are a bit guilty here because they charge so much money for allowing a dog on a plane. And if I happen to have an 80-pound dog, what do I do? How do I get from one place to another if I cannot drive with that dog?
I don't know, but I don't think it should be sitting next to me and coach.
I understand the conundrum, you know, and I'm not sure that I know the answer. I think we need to come up with a compromise just to say, well, first off, the airlines now have finally smartened up and said no peacocks and, you know,
snakes,
those guys. Yeah,
turkeys,
that was,
pheasants,
yes,
pigs.
That was all ridiculous. I mean, yeah. there's no doubt that never should have been allowed in the first place.
And I don't know what a definition of a comfort pet is. I suppose you do, but I believe that those creatures comfort people.
Absolutely.
Who are anxious on planes. So too does Xanax, Chardonnay, or or take a car, take a train.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, just because that thing gives you comfort, I don't know that that necessarily means it needs to be in a plane.
I don't completely disagree with you, because I'm thinking of the animals. So some of these animals are quite anxious themselves because they're not trained to do this. And sometimes they're not really comfort dogs, because here's what you can do right now. You can go online to any number of websites, pay $35 or $50, and you can say your dog or cat or
really?
Whatever is a comfort animal.
Really?
Sure. Yeah.
Wow. Let's pick up a couple more phone lines. John's on WGN. Hi, John. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, John. My wife and I rescued a pit bull mix from a kill shelter in Indiana, and not long afterwards, I was trying to shop around for homeowner's insurance. And when I told them I had a pit mix, they refused to insure me. And I was wondering if that's legal.
Depends on the state. Go to State Farm, and there are other insurance companies that can care less what kind of dog you say you have. First of all. Secondly, I guess you learn the hard way. You could have just said it's a mixed breed dog. And it is. I mean, most dogs that look like pit bulls, incidentally, are just that. They're mixed breed dogs. And I think the insurance companies that discriminate like that are just wrong for doing so. And it should not, in fact, be legal.
John, thanks for the call. 708 texted in and said, get pet insurance. My dog had cancer. They paid 80%.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you were talking about.
Yep.
So get, and that might be the kind of policy that doesn't do much for well care.
Correct.
But if there's something catastrophic, that's what you need.
Absolutely.
I think well care is baked into the cost of owning a dog. But then you get this decision where the vet says it's going to be $6,000 to fix this. And I was always, oh, well, then that's when you just say goodbye to your dog. Oh, no, you don't.
No,
you,
yeah.
You find $6,000 and it's hard.
Yep.
Maybe you have $6,000. A friend of mine put it on her credit card.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, which is not a good way to go.
No, and I'll be talking about some better ways to go as it happens in 2 weeks on my show. I just lost a dog. I mean, I understand.
How long ago?
2.5 weeks ago.
Steve, I didn't know that.
Really? Yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. Thank How you doing?
Okay. Okay.
Pick up another phone line?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm on the King Show. It's up to you.
Adam, you're on WGN. What can we do for you, Adam? Hi.
Yeah, just commenting on the cost. I purchased a basset hound last year. Went to one of those pet stores up in the far northwest suburbs where they have, you know, a dozen different puppies, and the basset hound there was over $3,000. Yeah. Went to a breeder, a reputable breeder, and got purebred with papers and shots and so forth for $800.
$800. So you did the $800 one.
Oh, yeah.
But the point of your story is that the reputable breeder was actually less money. But what's more,
absolutely,
that reputable breeder, if it truly is a responsible breeder, you know it's a basset hound. What we know, John, about pet stores, because we can do genetic tests today, is they say it's a basset hound.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of looks like a basset hound.
Right.
Probably isn't really a
do
basset
I care?
Hound.
I mean,
a lot of people do. You know, if you want a purebred dog. And besides, isn't it called fraud when you think you're paying for something
well,
and it's
that.
Not?
Yeah. There's that. Interesting. Hey, Adam, thanks for the phone call.
Sure.
You have a good day. What about Dave? You're on WGN. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Good morning, John. Steve, sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
But, yeah, I just wanted to, you know, I don't think that there's anything as a bad dog. There's bad dog owners.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's wonderful animals out there, but those who are looking for purebred dogs that have had their papers and health testing or bred by responsible breeders, there is a huge dog show going out on this weekend at Great Lake County Fairgrounds.
Yes,
and you can find a breed of your choice there.
Well, you know what? That's really I'm glad actually. I mean, it sounds like a crazy plug, but he's right. I mean, that's where you go to find responsible breeders. And one way of defining a responsible breeder in general is those folks go to dog shows. They care about their dogs.
Dave, thanks for the call. I'm going to go from you to Terry. I got a minute left. Hey, Terry, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Jan, I couldn't agree with you more that an 80-pound dog shouldn't be sitting next to me and coach, but I also agree. I also think that those dogs shouldn't be in those Home Depots and running around. I saw a huge dog fight, not in Home Depot, but in a Farm and Fleet
really?
A couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
And a little tat was only feet away from it. But I am sorry for your loss, Steve, too, by
Thank
the
you.
Way.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank
I'm glad you brought up that point, too. This is some of us here on the shows have been
I've heard about it
talking a lot about pets in stores.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with it. I mean, the
how about in restaurants?
In restaurants it's against law. So, outside restaurants it's another story.
So in the Home Depot it's okay for you.
It depends. Yeah, it depends if the retailer
how about
says it's okay,
store?
It's okay.
How about at a
why
Gap
not?
Gap clothing store?
Why not? It's unlikely I've never seen a dog fight at one of these.
I haven't
for the
either.
Most part,
but I've seen him go to the bathroom.
Well,
you have
I've
the,
not.
You have the stand. Go ahead.
For the most part, people bring dogs they know they can bring into these stores. And I'd rather see that than see someone tie out a dog outside
of
Starbucks.
Yeah, I've seen
which is actually against the law in Chicago.
No kidding.
I wrote the law. I know that. Technically.
Of course you did.
Technically, most law enforcement individuals don't know that. But it actually is against law.
Steve, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
Becoming the pan-global, all-American, all-world advocate for pets.
Thank you.
He is going to pick up the trophy in August. Is it this
early,
summer?
Yeah, early August in San Diego. Come out to San Diego.
You know, you were on with Bill and Wendy in this slot a lot. Let's make you a more frequent guest on this show.
I would be honored to do so because this is the royal court.
It is not. It's good to see you. That's our
Thank
Steve
you.
Dale.
Thank
and,
you.
And the news is coming up. Karen Darch is on the phone. Let's give her just a minute. I know she doesn't have a long time, but I'm really excited about something going on in her town this weekend. Barrington Village President Karen Darch, I'm going to be in your town Saturday, right?
That's right, John. Good morning.
Good morning.
We're happy to see you then.
What do you call this warming event you guys do?
So this is the Barrington Town Warming. And it's our third annual town warming, and it is an all-day meeting at our White House, not a meeting, a lovely presentation from various speakers on topics. This year, our theme is Vision 2020, Media, Politics, and the Arts in the New Decade.
Hmm. Boy, that could go a lot of different directions. There's a lot to explore with a theme like that.
Sure. With the media, we're focusing on what it's like to have the media cover an election, covered in an election year, and our folks on that panel represent a newspaper, we have an editor, and we have a TV political editor, and a cartoonist who's a syndicated national political cartoonist.
That's my friend Scott Stantis.
Who's coming
back.
Right.
Yeah, he knows his stuff. There are few people as good as Scott, so he'll be on a panel, right?
He will be on a panel, yep. And we have another panel on the arts with folks from the Lyric Opera and the Art Institute of Chicago and the Architecture Center and a native Barringtonian who wrote a book, a best-selling author, and the Divergent series author, Veronica Roth, is a panelist. And their topic is the importance of arts and literature and design. Why does that matter in 2020?
Yeah. And then is Chris Christie still coming?
Chris Christie is coming, and he will participate in a fireside chat with the CEO of Motorola, Greg Brown, who is a Barrington area resident. And we're really excited to hear what he has to say.
My goodness. Wow. That's cool. I mean, Chris Christie's coming out, and he's going to sit and talk to you guys for the purpose of this event.
Exactly. Yes. Yes. And of course, we have you coming, John.
Yeah. Well, the only reason I'm coming, thank you, I'm flattered for the invitation, is because I'm bringing my friend Teddy Roosevelt. And I think if there was a nexus of the arts and politics and the election and the media, it would be those stage shows we do with Thomas Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt. So thank you for the invitation. I think we'll be a perfect match for what you're going to do.
Exactly. We're so excited to have you, and we're really excited about the whole day. We have our tickets for the upstairs, and so this is in our Barrington White House, and those tickets went very quickly, but we still have a few tickets left for our first floor seating where we live stream the program from upstairs.
So this is how well you all do it. So the seating area for this is sold out, and now you've got overflow. Folks are watching and listening to that, and you're about sold out on that too.
Exactly.
But you certainly accommodate those people. It's a real nice place you got there. So if I want those last tickets, what should I do?
So you should go to barringtonswhitehouse.com website, events. So Barrington's with the S, whitehouse.com events, and see if you can snag one of those last tickets.
Yeah. By the way, Thomas Jefferson, Teddy Roosevelt and I are on at 1, is it noon to 1? Is that
No, you're 1:30. Yeah. Yes.
Memo to self, 1:30 to 2:30, we are on the stage. And
exactly.
Then Chris Christie after that. And so for those of you who have seen the Teddy Roosevelt or Thomas Jefferson shows, we normally go close to 2 hours. This will be a 1 hour sort of smaller presentation, but we'll do what we always do. I'll come out and talk to Roosevelt a little bit about current events, about events in the past. We'll then take questions from the crowd, and then I think we'll kind of take off the mask, if you will, and talk a little bit about how this works, what it means, and why it's important. We don't normally get to do that, but I have not gone down this path with this as a pursuit or a goal, that I want to bring the presidents and American politics to the people in an entertaining way, but that's what this does. It's so unique. I think it's so valuable. I really do.
Well, thank you so much. We agree, and we're excited to have it, and we're excited that you're able to come back and join us for it.
How about this? Barrington's village doing something that a lot of villages just don't do. What a great idea. Karen, congratulations in advance. I'll see you on Saturday. I'll be bringing the, 23rd? What president is he? Teddy Roosevelt will be coming with me, and we'll have a swell time.
Exactly. Thank you so much, John.
Bye, Karen.
See you then.
Yeah, my best to you. They did that. This is the third year. I was a solo speaker the first year, and they immediately invited me back if I brought somebody else.
That sounds like such a cool thing.
It's like a Chautauqua, you know, which is a fancy word for what she just said. But there's these things on a national scale. You know, the Clintons run a Chautauqua. It's like TED Talks times something, and it's a day-long event. So they'll have a little light breakfast. They break for lunch. And then TR and I come out after lunch for the post-lunch entertainment. By the way, in the next half hour, we'll visit with a guy who is an award-winning National Geographic photographer. His name is in front of me, Steve Winter. And one of the things he does is treks through the Himalayas and the Rocky Mountains, and for that matter, Hollywood Hills. And he photographs cats, big and small, snow leopards to mountain lions and bobcats in the Los Angeles area. You've seen stories about them. And what he says about that, in how endangered some of those species are and how those animals are interacting with us, is fascinating. And the video he's captured over the years is really something to see, and there are great stories to tell. Now, he's going to be at the Auditorium Theater Sunday at 3. Auditorium Theater Sunday at 3. But he's going to say hi to us and preview it in about 15 minutes. Have you ever done one of those tours with Steve Bertrand Travel where people go on... not exactly a safari.
Like a nature hunt?
Yeah, right.
No, not really. We did the Norway trips. I did one, and David Dennett did one in the fjords and things like that. So yeah. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But not a lot. Well, we did see some seals in Ireland last year. Some harbor seals.
When we travel, I like to go to places with swell hotels or a nice cabin on a boat.
Right.
And God bless nature, but I want to have a good shower and a nice meal.
Yeah.
I want to see a show.
That's funny because we've been trying to balance it a little more because Sharon's more of an outdoors person. So getting out and seeing, not hiking or anything like that, for God's sakes, but... You know, getting on lakes or, you know, taking trains through mountains or things like that.
Well, what's the trip that Dave's doing now?
Dave's going to Scotland in June 8th. It's a 10-day trip. And there's a boat ride there on the Loch Ness. So you can look
for the
monster.
You will see nature because the Loch Ness Monster makes regular appearances.
Well, and the Loch Ness is a big lake, so you can see that too.
Do they do some shtick? Do they have an inflatable thing? And they go, hey, look, it's over there.
You know, we were there. I took a group there, I think, in 2015. And I had a couple, and they've been on like 6 trips since. They just wanted a little Nessie doll for their grandchild.
Yeah.
And it was kind of hard to find.
Really?
So they don't make a huge deal of it.
Wow. I was so disappointed when I realized that the Abominable Snowman and Loch Ness Monster were not real. I was really rooting for them. Like, it didn't seem plausible, but what if it was?
So you're still holding out for Bigfoot?
You know, I talked to this guy who wrote a book about that. It came out about 15 years ago. So I read the book and interviewed him. And he was like a Harvard professor of something or another. But he was a legitimate stand-up guy. And he wasn't a cuckoo bananas fella. And he didn't convince you. I don't even think he convinced himself that Bigfoot was a thing.
Right.
But he also presented the evidence to, you know, do more than just Daryl and his brother Daryl on one of those ridiculous TV shows going, I saw it in the woods.
So there is stuff there.
Yeah, that's what he said. And so I don't know what that was, but he said there was something going on out there. But back to Dave Ennett's trip. So...
boat ride on the Loch Ness, and then they're going to go up to the Highlands, which is, we talk about nature, a beautiful ride through there up to the Isle of Skye. You'll see St. Andrews. You stayed in Edinburgh, so you know how cool Edinburgh is.
It's worth the trip.
It's in the Grass Market neighborhood where the group's going to stay. These apartments, actually, really cool, and Glasgow as well. And there's still room on it if people want to go. And what I keep telling people is it's such a welcoming group always. You'll come home with friends that you never knew you'd had, and you'll keep them. The Glowatses, who were looking for Nessie, I think they've been on 6 trips with us now.
Does Dave Ennett's coming along help or hurt sales?
Dave is neutral, but the fact that his wife Karen is going is a big boost.
Dave's a swell fella, and you will get a chance to enjoy his company too, plus all of that.
Yeah, so. Talk Northwestern football and all of that with Dave.
Yeah, well, you will. Certainly, Dave's happy to talk about that. So it's SteveBertrandTravel.com, right?
SteveBertrandTravel.com, or just call me at 847-606-6065. We've still got some room.
By the way, a little while ago, we were talking. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh,
what
no.
is. Is he, Lou?
Well, I know the speakers are on in this building, but I didn't know that Anna was still in the building. So cover me on this. Hey, Dave. What's going on?
You know I'm right here.
I didn't know you were right here. I'm in the studio.
Does Dave Ennett's presence hurt or help?
Why do you think Dave's so boring, John? What is that?
I did not say that. I was just tweezing him a little bit, thinking he wasn't down the hall.
At my desk, where I normally am.
I know, but okay. What if you cut out earlier?
I think we've all been on these trips, and I think we all agree probably our wives do better at it than
we do. Well, that's the thing. Yes. I mean, you kind of know who Dave and John and Steve are, but have you met our ladies? And they're lovely, and they are kind of the ace in the hole. People get on the boats or the buses wanting to meet us, and...
Then they're done with that.
And then they want to stay in touch with our wives.
Yeah, exactly. I want to hang out with your wife. Okay.
So are you cool to talk Northwestern basketball or football if people come up and go, hey, Dave.
Absolutely.
What do you think about us next year? What's our chances at the QB spot? How are we going to do on that? You're okay with that?
Well, the way you phrased it sounded odd, but yes, of course.
I didn't mention either, though. You're going to see the old course at St. Andrews.
Which I'm really excited about.
And I'm not a big golfer, but when I saw it, it's like chilling because there's so many great scenes we've seen on TV through the years going up into 18. And you can walk right along the fairways. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So
that doesn't register with John, you can tell.
No, I'm happy for you all, but I ain't doing that. how many trips have you done with Bertrand Travel?
This will be my third.
Oh, really?
Went to Denmark and Norway two years ago. Went to Italy last summer.
Yeah.
I had never been.
Yeah.
It was spectacular.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. And the trips are great. The people are great. You stay in nice, really nice hotels.
This is true. On the trips we've done with Steve, there's a lot of ways to do this.
People still think of European hotels as sort of old and run down.
They're different than American hotels. So sometimes they're older and they're quaint, they're charming, but they do a nice job. And you always put us in the 4-star hotels,
right?
So you ain't suffering for being in Europe.
No,
these things. That's for sure.
Not at all.
Tell them about the haggis.
No, I'm not going to do that. All right. So SteveBertrandTravel.com, and you get a chance to meet Dave Ennett, who's delightful, as almost delightful as his wife.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, Dave. Thanks for running down the hall. It's 11:21. I'm looking at my producer, Olaf. Is it time for a break? Okay. Then I do have time for this. We were talking earlier about selling pot out of trucks and vans and at farmers markets. There's a group of people in Chicago that want to do that. Now that it's legal, why do we just give it to those well-moneyed people? How about letting street vendors sell it the way you'd find them on the South Side? A push cart, for that matter, a rundown building they could rehab. But that's an economic engine. More people should participate. Somebody texted in and said, well, in New York, they have that. I said, oh, no, they don't. Then Elephant Steve Googled, weed trucks, New York, or something like that? And they do. I'm just reading this piece here. Sometimes I think this is a first person, Jeremy Glass. Sometimes I think New York's just as weird as our parents warned us it would be. Granted, they grew up at a different time, but he says that weed is not legal in the state of New York, but the laws are easing up a little bit. So how does Weed World Candies sell weed-laced edibles to people without getting into too much trouble with the cops? There is no THC in the pops. Suckers, I guess they have, a Weed World associate says, who declined to be named, told me while hanging out of a window of a truck parked on 6th Avenue in Greenwich Village one day. So I wonder if these things are operating legally, though. It sounds like not, right? The lollipops contain tiny trace amounts of CBD, an entirely separate non-psychoactive compound. Oh, okay. Well, then if these are the CBD ones, maybe these aren't true marijuana pops.
Oh, I see. Right. I just read the headline.
Yeah, and maybe they're not. And it doesn't sound like they're selling weed. They're not selling the loose leaf stuff.
Well, maybe out of the back of the truck.
I'm just so intrigued by the idea, though. I mean, there is a certain, you guys are, once again, the man is getting and the people are not attitude on the South and West Side, where they say, okay, now it's legal. And these well-heeled companies that had the dispensaries are in, and they're establishing their markets, and they're doing a lot of marketing. I get mailers all the time at my house for my local weed shop.
Close to one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm 4 blocks away. It's right off of Grace and Clark.
Did I tell you I was going to go to the one near me? And I mean, I'm interested. I haven't smoked pot in decades, but and I even got the cash out. And then when it came time to, I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Really?
Well, I mean, I might eventually, but I'm like, yeah, not today.
You wanted the thrill of buying it. You weren't sure if you were ready for the thrill of consuming
it. No, I'm interested in seeing, what, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm interested in trying the edibles or something. I'm not going to smoke it.
But. Yeah. By the way, the second day of the impeachment trial gets underway today. House managers begin their second day of arguments. Just a couple notes about all of that. And then we'll visit with that National Geographic award-winning photographer. He's giving a talk in Chicago this weekend. I'm really interested in visiting with him. Sean Hannity said on Fox News last night that it looked like Adam Schiff lost his mind, that he was just out of control. He said he lost his mind. He was babbling over and over again incoherently. Then I switched over to CNN, and David Axelrod was there, and John Dean was there, and they called Adam Schiff's performance a tour de force. They said it was one of the most remarkable performances they'd ever seen on the Senate floor. See, this is the thing. Whatever happens to Donald Trump, we're a divided country. We'll be divided about the results, but we are even divided about the process to determine what will happen to him. And by the way, a lot of the Republican senators that you know are tweeting out about this, and they are using the same sort of language that the president is, that this is a sham, etc. The president yesterday broke his own record for tweets and retweets. Now, I follow him on Twitter, and I didn't count this many, so I don't know exactly how they're doing this. But the number of tweets and retweets from the president's account yesterday, 142. Now, maybe they mean the White House site as well, because I'm telling you, I didn't see 142 retweets and tweets on Donald Trump's page yesterday, although he was very busy. His take on the impeachment and the retweets of many, so he puts out, he's retweeting a lot of senators that agree with him. He retweets the GOP because they have a Twitter account and they've got talking points. He retweeted Rush Limbaugh. He retweeted Rand Paul, who called Schiff's presentation a charade. He retweeted Ted Cruz, who said, if you have the facts, bang the facts. If you've got the law, bang the law. If you have neither, bang the table. Today, we've seen a whole lot of table banging, said Ted Cruz.
That's just not true. I'm sorry. I mean, I know we're trying to stay out of it, but they believe it or not, or believe it's removable or not, they gave lots of facts yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just so that's, I just have to speak up and say, whether or not you think he should be removed or not, thing when people say things like that, it's just not, it's not true.
The Republicans will have their day. The House managers are making their case right now. So it does look a little one-sided during the day. It's funny to me how long this thing seems to go on,
I can't believe anybody's watching.
Walter Jacobson walked by my office yesterday. It was on, and he goes, are they still going at it? I mean, I thought, this is the shorter version.
Yeah, I try to tune in or check in from, I mean, obviously for the news, but like it was going last night. And just to stand there and watch someone speak, I can't believe they're, you know, grasping much attention.
I'm not surprised by what these guys are saying, but I wish they wouldn't be saying it, because it would be to me like a juror standing up and going, oh, this is a crock at a trial. And you would say, no, wait. Hear all the evidence. We know we have our biases. You may have already made up your mind, but keep it to yourself. But yet the senators are tweeting out things. The president's retweeting them. And this is supposed to be a fair and impartial trial. And it doesn't even have the patina of that if the jurors are already rendering their decision. It's 11:28. This is WGN. So they're doing this thing over at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago Sunday. I hope the walks will be clear then. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Steve Winter, the award-winning National Geographic photographer, is going to be there. He gives talks across the country, I suppose the world. If I showed you some of the photographs, you'd recognize them probably. And he has these amazing videos as well. How he captures them is a story. What the state of big cats in the world is a story, too. And he's going to talk all about that. Steve's on line 7. Steve, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How you doing today?
Actually, I'm assuming you're East Coast. Where are you right now, Steve?
No, I'm in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, where I'm doing the same talk I'll be doing in Chicago tonight. Yeah, it's kind of cold up here.
What's the weather like?
Oh, it's not bad. It's only about 20. So yeah. They said last week it was minus 50. So we have to be happy for things like just 20.
So did you always, like, what drove you to the job and the life that you've had? Was it a love of nature and animals, or was it a love of photography?
Great question. I grew up in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and it was a love of photography. My desire as an 8-year-old kid looking at National Geographic and Life magazine was to go to those villages I was seeing and meet those exotic people. I never in a million years ever looked at animal stories and thought, that's what I'm going to do, because where I grew up, all we had were cows and pigs and squirrels and raccoons and deer, you know. So, but, you know, life takes us on different courses. I knew the power of photography by looking at some of the images in Life magazine and National Geographic, and decided that my dream was I wanted to be a nat geo photographer when I grew up. And lucky enough, I got to realize my dream. It just happens to be with big cats.
Right. I mean, you could be photographing people around the world or other nature scenes or other animals, but it turned out to be big cats. So that's really what you do, right? You're not doing other assignments for them. You're always tracking cats, are you?
100%. I mean, the last story was the December issue written by my wife, journalist Sharon Guynup, and Nat Geo Explorer Woodrow Wilson Fellow. But it was on tigers in the United States under private ownership. What we're trying to do is get the Chinese to do something about their tiger farms and to save the species from extinction. So we do certain things that have tangible results.
What's a tiger farm?
Give the government enough money, give the government enough information to make a decision on this, because first responders are tired of going into Houston after a hurricane, opening the door to a house and have a lion jump out at them, or there was a tiger in a church when they're in the last hurricane. Somebody just dumped it in there and closed the door.
No kidding. You said tiger farms in China. I mean, are tigers endangered? And what's a tiger farm? It would seem to me a tiger farm would be a good thing. You'd get more tigers there.
Well, yeah, but it keeps the people's desire for ingesting either parts of this endangered species that have no medicinal value. It's like rhino horn. People say, well, rhinos are going extinct because some guy in Vietnam said he got cured of cancer. And rhino horn's made out of keratin, the same thing as our fingernails and our hair, and has zero medicinal value. It's, you know, most of our pharmaceutical drugs come from Mother Nature, over 50%. Like aspirin comes from the bark of a tree, stuff like that. But this endangered species, like using tiger, that's all based on, you know, getting the strength and the power of this cat. And no, that's a bunch of mumbo jumbo.
I could see how they would try and sell that. What's the most endangered species then in the cat family?
The most endangered species is the tiger. That's why we're trying to stop this. My wife and I got the tiger temple in Thailand closed down, or gave the government there enough information after four stories and the video that we did for Nat Geo. They went in and removed and saved all 163 tigers. They just wouldn't believe that a Buddhist monastery that had tigers for tourism purposes would be involved in the black market trade. And I said, I'm from Indiana. That place says it has 150 cats all the time, but 365 days a year you can bottle feed or pet a tiger cub. That means they're breeding them. What do you have when you breed dogs and cats? More dogs and cats. It's no different here. And so we gave them enough information, and they found out, yeah, they indeed were shipping these cats off dead to China.
Wow. What's the what's your take on then zoos that hold tigers and these big cats? Is that good for the species and good for us, or are you not an advocate of that?
Well,
he's way,
I have my own
that's
opinion,
that's the sound of a man who does not want
Sunday
to answer that question.
I walk on stage on Sunday as a for National Geographic. Now, listen, these animals exist in these zoos because as a kid, what zoo did I go to? Your zoo in Chicago, in Fort Wayne. We used to go to the Field Museum, all that. The animals are alive. They're in the zoos. They offer education. Those things are vitally important. I just spent 2 months seeing big cats in horrific conditions, and except for the good sanctuaries like Turpentine Creek in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, the Wild Animal Sanctuary in Colorado, Big Cat Rescue in Tampa, but some just horrific things. So it's hard to talk about animals in cages.
Yeah, right.
Right now, it's kind of a sore spot for me, and we would just like to be able to stop this. There are no federal regulations for a $40 USDA permit. You can own a tiger. But what I'm going to talk about on Sunday, I'm going to show a few of these images, but really what the talk is about being a National Geographic photographer in the field working with big cats. What is that like? How do you start a story, you know? You come up with an idea, and you have to write a proposal and do a budget and get permission for the editor-in-chief, and off you go. But then you need permits from a country such as India, where I did tigers, that take 2 years to get permits. So it's a long process. So I'm going to talk about my first encounter with big cats that scared me to death and what got me started in big cats. So we'll do jaguars, snow leopards, cougars, and tigers on Sunday.
Jaguars, to me, are the most exotic of them all, or intriguing. Can you validate that a little bit? Aren't they interesting animals?
Yeah, no, they're incredibly interesting because they also do things differently. They kill their prey unlike any other cat. Usually they get the throat. A jaguar pierces the skull. It's got the second strongest jaw strength of, you know, in the world. Besides the animal that it likes eating the most, where you can see them, which is the Pantanal in western Brazil. I did the first jaguar story ever for National Geographic. Then I did the second jaguar story ever. And then a TV show for Nat Geo Wild with Bertie Gregory called Jaguars versus Crocs that we're going to see part of that on Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's incredible, you know, and they're such intelligent animals. Pat Craig, who started the biggest sanctuary in the United States, just a wonderful man in a wonderful place, he said that they're the most intelligent cat he's ever encountered. And in the wild, they used to follow me, and I would never see them. I get goosebumps on the back of my neck and on my arm, and I turn around, and you don't see anything. Because you're in the jungle, the rainforest.
Yeah.
You know, because we're hardwired like cavemen still, you know something's following you because you don't see it. And being a kid from Indiana, and that my first natural history story, I was afraid. No doubt about it. But then I found out they're just curious cats.
Have they ever come after you?
For 23 years.
Have you ever had an encounter where they're coming after you or something like that?
Well, every story I do, my heart's in my throat and I can't breathe and the camera's shaking so bad. I figure, you know, the film or the picture is going to be unusable. But they always stop because we're not a part of these animals' image search for food, and we haven't been for millennia because we walk on 2 feet, forward-facing eyes. And I keep telling people, because when I did the Hollywood Cougar, the mountain lion on the Hollywood side.
Yeah, I remember that.
People start getting worried, and I said, you know, we don't smell like food either, folks. We use fragrant soaps in our laundry. We use shampoos that smell like lavender. We use deodorant that smells like Old Spice. We use perfumes, colognes, toothpaste. So when we walk by, if a cat could, it would probably hold its nose and go, that doesn't smell like food to me. That smells like a chemical factory, you know. So,
and should I also look directly at the cat? You said forward-facing eyes are not in their food footprint, so that's a good idea, too?
Well, I've had people that tell me that you do want to make eye contact with them. Gorillas, no, but we're not talking about gorillas.
No.
Gorillas, you need to, at a silverback, look down because that's giving deference to the silverback, the guy who's in charge.
Yeah.
I look right in the eyes of lions and tigers and all this. Tigers are mysterious, I'll tell you that, when you look in their eyes. Lions are the laziest cat in the big cat family, that's for sure.
Steve Winter's a photographer for National Geographic. Can you tell? He's giving a speech. He's giving a talk. You'll see videos and pictures as well. Sunday at 3 o'clock at the Auditorium Theater in Chicago. Go to the Auditorium Theater's website. The tickets start at $42, go to $54. It says here this is a family-friendly event, but as you can imagine, a show about big cats includes depictions and discussions of the realities of nature. Good luck to you, safe travels, and thanks for some of your time, Steve. We'll be looking for your work.
Thank you very much. I look forward to speaking Sunday afternoon. See you all there.
Steve Winter. Steve Winter sounds like a good guy, doesn't he? But he also sounds like a guy who might have been participating in the previous conversation when we were talking about marijuana. By the way, lots of texts today about what's going on with the now day two of the House managers presenting their case in the impeachment trial of Donald Trump. 414 said, hey, you guys are smarter than that. Schiff, facts? Schiff lies. Come on. But the next text says, I know it seems boring to those in need, but at the end of the day, when we're at the health club, we're all watching the impeachment. I guess that's who they want to play to. It's something different. It's actually very interesting. The Democrats' visuals are very compelling. 847 said, John, people are so tired of the previous charades of Democrats that they don't care about the facts on impeachment. The Democrats are lying in all of this. May the best liar win. And what if you get liars trying to judge a liar and the other liars are sitting in judgment? 217 says, John, the fact is it is described as a performance on the Senate floor. That confirms the fact that it's just a show. Grandstanding, drama, politics. It's a waste of our time and dollars. 708, there has to be a transcript of the proceedings. It is what court reporters do, including from the tapes. Do not miss the part about Ukraine giving up the nukes for our promise to protect them from Russia. And another one says, you guys are so right in saying that the evidence given by the Democrats is factual. How could we possibly teach our children, grandchildren, and ourselves that truth is honorable? How could we teach them truth is honorable when the other side keeps defending the president? I'm just reading these both ways. I think the best description of what I've seen on TV so far was on CNN the other day when they presented the one side saying that the president wasn't given a fair chance, and the other side saying, give us all of the evidence. And they said they're talking past each other. If Schiff says one thing, the other side doesn't necessarily rebut it. They just present a phrase that I don't mind at all, an alternate fact. So you say that, and rather than contesting the veracity of it, I just then give you some other grievance I have, which is also true, or at least it's true to me. And now we're battling back and forth with our views of the thing, but we're not actually connecting on the central points. And I think that's what I'm seeing when I watch. I'm amazed at how much I'm able to not watch. I mean, there are times where I find myself kind of getting drawn in. But then other times I walk away and I don't feel like I'm going to miss something really, really important here, particularly since they've got 24 hours of time to make their opening remarks. And then the other side gets 24 hours. And then if they present evidence or if they have witnesses, then that'll take time as well. I mentioned this the other day, and it's still hard for me to believe because it wasn't that long ago. Bill Clinton's impeachment took almost, 7 weeks. 7 weeks. So I don't know how long this is going to take. Does it seem long to you or does it seem too quick? But that's how long we were living with that thing. So I imagine we're going to live with this thing for a while still. It's the president and the Republicans' point to try and get it done before February 4th. And that's when they have the State of the Union address, which will sure be interesting. I don't remember what it was like when Bill Clinton was president. And I guess he gave a State of the Union after he was exonerated by the Senate. So I guess Donald Trump may have that opportunity, too. He surely wants that beforehand. 142 tweets or so he put out yesterday. He's keen about this. He's really following it. They asked him if he'd like to show up at his impeachment trial, and he was just playful about it. He says, oh, yeah, I'd love to go. You know, don't bring it up too much or I just might. Can you imagine me sitting there glaring at those people in the front row? Yeah, I'd like to do that, but he hasn't. And he won't. We are living a real Emperor's New Clothes story. The Mincing Rascals will get into some of this. Here's one of the questions we're going to debate. The weekly podcast we record, we're going to talk a lot about. There's some great Chicago stories, by the way. But when we do go to Trump land, one of the things we'll be talking about today will be, would you trade Bolton for the Bidens? If that was the deal, okay, you want John Bolton and these people to testify, fine. But if we're going to start bringing witnesses, we're going to bring Hunter Biden out there, and we're going to bring Joe Biden out there. And by the way, we're going to ask for the whistleblower as well. Would you make that deal if that's what it came to? We'll see what the Mincing Rascals say. We'll record that just a little bit, and then we'll post it around 4 or 5 o'clock this afternoon on my webpage, WGNradio.com, and also on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John there. More than 26 million customers have their DNA information stored in those databases. There's 4 big DNA testing companies. Have you done that? DNA testing companies are just as vulnerable to data breaches as other companies. And that happens all the time. DNA information could be a tempting target for hackers who want to sell that on the dark web. It's important to understand how cybercrime is affecting our lives in many different ways. I was filling out a form online the other day, and I thought, I don't feel good about this because it was a legit thing I'm doing. It was a legit agency I was dealing with. But you put that out there, and you just hit OK or return or send. But now that I've got LifeLock, you should have LifeLock. When you do that, you feel so much better about participating on the planet online. Identity theft happens every 2 seconds, and you could miss stuff. If there's an identity theft problem, their agents work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions, but LifeLock can see threats you might miss. So join now and save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or visit LifeLock.com. Use the promo code LifeLock, and you can save up to 25%. As much as we could talk about the impeachment, we haven't been. You've been hearing it in the news. We've been putting a couple of guests on, but by and large, we're waiting for this thing to play out before we render judgment here. The thing that's getting my text line busy is pets. We were talking with Steve Dale a little while ago about service pets, rescue pets. What do they call them? The kind of pets that make you calm. If you're flying, you know, you've got anxiety, you've got some issue. And so then you put emotional support dogs and cats and bunny rabbits and goats. So they're starting to crack down on that on airlines. And that just lit up the lines. And then we talked about where you buy a pet from, et cetera. John, there are stickers on many, many store windows stating that they are pet friendly. 630 said, I was in Nordstrom at Christmas time, and a huge dog was there. Apparently, Nordstrom is dog friendly, too. However, the woman in line before me was deathly afraid of dogs and started to have a panic attack. She had to leave the store. I asked the customer service person about the dog, and she implored me to talk to the manager, as many employees are not in favor of the policy. What if you're allergic? A couple of you said that you are. John, if I sit next to a dog and I have allergies, which require me to see a doctor following exposure in a situation like that on a plane, who am I going to get to cover my medical cost? And this is from Lori with Midwest Dachs and Rescue. Thanks, Lori. We're big supporters of yours. She writes, dogs like Daisy that you adopted came to us voluntarily from a puppy mill. We do not buy dogs from them. They are given to us. We vet and get them healthy. That is so true. So at the end of the day, you are not supporting a puppy mill. Lori, thanks for texting that in. I did wonder that out loud. And Brenda and I are big supporters of and fans of the Midwest Dachs and Rescue. Down the hall we go. Hey, G, are you sitting over there?
I sure am. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm just yakking away over here. What's going on with you?
You're pretty good at it, I have to say.
Some days better than others.
Well, we're going to be talking with an editor from CNET about all the new tech and gadgets. Of course, a lot happening with cell phones, including foldable cell phones that can
Isn't that weird?
I know, fold up in your pocket. But Apple is going to come out with an affordable iPhone, which is bucking the trend of all of these phones that are way over $1,000.
Do you know what the price is? What does affordable mean to them?
I think I don't know off the top of my head. We'll get the scoop. I think it's around $400.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I don't think I bought a phone in a while for less than $600.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
If they have something under $500, I think that's a good idea.
Yes, it's around 400. That's what I'm hearing. We'll get the scoop from the CNET editor. But also, did you know that only 40% of Americans could pay an unexpected $1,000 expense? So that tells you how many people are living paycheck to paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
So whether you're one of those folks or whether you're an advanced investor, we have a senior portfolio manager in the show today, and he's going to be taking calls and text messages. He's going to answer any question from how do you start saving to what stocks are good to invest into.
Oh, I like the sound of that. That's all right around the corner. Have a good show, G. That's
Thank
coming
you.
Up next. This is WGN.